on one of those days already, which is not a good thing. I've got a computer that's gradually going into meltdown, and bits of it keep going missing. It's kind of in the early stages of hard drive failure. So I keep going to open programs and discovering I've lost them. And today it was the turn of Dropbox not to work, which means nothing to most of you. But it's what I rely to get my notes for what I'm going to say onto my iPad so I can speak from them. So I actually had to use the computer printer, only to discover there was no ink in it. So it's just been kind of one of those days when it hasn't quite worked out. It's also a bit weird because, in a way, I'm about to introduce a series that has already sort of begun. Kind of Dedo spoke into it when she spoke about the heart of Jesus. I think actually what Dawn was saying last week about Nourish and about how kind of people are trying to respond to poverty in our community, I think speaks into it as well. And what's going to follow this term flows very much out of it. But it's a bit odd introducing it once we've started. I also did something really foolish. I gave myself the most incredibly highbrow title. It started out as something like Kingdom and Culture, Making Sense of Work, Creativity and Frustration. I will allude to some of that, but in the end I just decided saying following Jesus in today's world might be a little bit easier for me to get over with my limited kind of... I kind of almost kind of outdid myself, really. So, kind of... We'll see where we go. Over the last couple of years, we've been thinking a lot about discipleship. It's something we've chosen. It's something we've been intentional about. Not just talking about discipleship, but wanting discipleship to be a key part of what we're about as a church family. If I could just have that next first slide. We changed our vision statement to igniting passion for Jesus because in a way that sums it up. We want to be people that are personally passionate about Jesus. We want to stir that up in those around us. You know, Matt, thank you for provoking us in our worship today. That's what we want to do when we gather together. We want to provoke ourselves to pursue Jesus personally. And we want to provoke each other, whether it's in house groups or pods or just in the relationships we have. We also want to provoke others that don't know Jesus yet to discover him and become passionate about him. That he would touch their lives too. So in a way, that sums up what we want to be about. This is kind of the third and final series on discipleship. It probably isn't the final series, but it was the third planned series. We've been breaking our thinking down into kind of those things I've just already mentioned, really. We began by thinking about our relationship with God in the first series. The second one was much more about our relationship together, what it means to be church, to be God's family, to grow in discipleship and to help each other grow in discipleship together. And this kind of final term, we're thinking about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus in God's world today. And I think for me, that's probably one of the most challenging ones, and possibly the one that I'm the least fitted as the vicar, who kind of lives in this ivory tower, to be talking about. So we're going to be involving a lot of people in this. Our focus is going to be what it means to follow God in his world today. And that's going to be happening on Sunday mornings. It's also going to be happening in our house groups, and they've already begun that too, in a variety of different ways. We've tried to give different options for people to make sense of it, kind of in the way that kind of works for them. To be honest, we could do this series in all sorts of different ways. We could do stuff about how to make disciples, how to share Jesus with people, how to tell our story of how we've come to, you know, how to teach, we could do stuff about teaching how to pray for people. Kind of all that stuff would have relevance. But what we've really wanted to do is to try and engage in some depth in what it means to follow Jesus in today's world. And perhaps we could have the next slide. Brilliant, you're there already. Anticipation. It's great. Thank you, Brian. I think kind of it strikes me as church, what we talk about has huge impact. Most of you spend most of your time a long way away from this church building. And we know church isn't just about building. Church is about a group of people and the relationships we share together. But you also probably spend most of your week kind of separate from those relationships. You spend it in your workplace. You spend it with your friends. You spend it, probably quite a lot of it, with your families. And yet what we talk about in church actually frequently has very little to do with the places that you spend most of your time. I think also there's a sense of what we value. And it seems to me that there is a tendency for church, and we try not to do this here, so it is a St. Matt's issue, but I think it's a big church issue that affects the church kind of nationally, that we kind of think that what we do in here is what really matters. You know, as a vicar, I'm kind of classic. You know, you pay me to work here and work in this community and lead this church. We have a staff that does that. And what we do is we dream up more and more things that we can do as a church family, you know? And actually, the danger is that we start to value what happens in church, and we don't value what kind of happens outside of church. So we value what someone does in church. You know, I love the fact that Matt leads worship, but I'm going to get this wrong if I'm not careful. Kind of, Matt builds things for a living, correct? Sort of. Well, you have a part to play in building things. They don't. You know, but when we look around this room, there are lots of people that play roles in church, and we put a lot of emphasis on those roles. But actually, actually that's a small, tiny part of what they do with their lives and what God has called them to. There are doctors, there are nurses, there are teachers. There are people that kind of fulfill all sorts of roles into society, and we don't celebrate those roles enough. And we don't equip people to fulfill those roles enough. It seems like we value what happens here, but not necessarily enough what happens kind of in the rest of the week and outside. And I think there's a tendency, when you do that, when you talk about something, when you value something, kind of that's what you tend to grow, isn't it? And the result of that is that I think there's something that's subtle that goes on. And the subtle message is that actually what happens in church is what is really important. And actually I think that's far from the case. The longer we're Christians, the tendency is the more time we spend hooked up on stuff in church and the less time we spend with people that don't share our faith. We kind of get more and more isolated into this Christian subculture, and that's not a healthy thing. And so kind of what we want to do this term is be thinking about how we reverse that. Sometimes when we do a series like this, we have a talk about what does it mean to be a Christian in the workplace. Well, a lot of our thinking this term will be about what it means to be a Christian in the workplace. Not just a talk, but we're going to try and focus on what it means to follow Jesus in the real world today. The places where we work, with our families, in a variety of different ways. And that means that, can we have the next slide, that work is going to figure large in what we talk about this term. Please don't switch off if you think, but I'm retired, or kind of, actually, I'm on long-term sick. That doesn't really kind of, I don't know how that kind of makes sense to me. There's two reasons why I don't want you to switch off. One is we want to kind of look at the key areas in our world today. And so some of the areas we're going to be touching on are business, health, education, family. Now, we may not be working in these areas, but actually these areas have huge impact on all of our lives. All of us at one time or another benefit or feel we should benefit from the health service. You know, business matters because our economy matters and it has implications for all of us. Education matters. We may not be earning education ourselves, but we have friends, we have children, we have grandchildren that are. These areas matter, and we need to understand the issues that Christians that work within them face. We need to be praying for those Christians that work within those areas and supporting them in it. They're the ones that are on the front line. The other thing that I think we need to kind of grasp is that we're talking about work, not just employment. Work is more than employment. And actually work has relevance for all of us. So why work? And that kind of begins me to the thrust of what I want to kind of talk about this morning. I think primarily because it's what we're made for. Our reading was about the fall, and we're going to come to that in a moment. But actually, we need to begin with creation. Genesis provides us with two accounts of creation. There's like a big picture account, which kind of deals with God creating out of nothing. The Latin word is ex nihilo, kind of creation out of nothing. He's saying that basically God created the world in which we live out of nothing. Whether it's through a process of evolution or kind of in 7 days, that's not what I'm getting into. It's that basic principle that God created what we have out of nothing and it was good. The second is much more of a detailed account of the creation of us, of men and of women. And so kind of, if we just jump to the next slide. Why does work matter? It matters because we're made in the image of God. This is from that first creation account. Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let him rule. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. We're made in the image of God. We're like him. Yes, that's been marred, but we're made in his image. It's not wiped out. The nature of God is to create. And if we're like him, that's kind of something that's part of our DNA. It's part of what it means for us to be made in the image of God, is that we mirror our creator. And our creator is a God that creates. And when we lose that, it's like, that we should have a sense of purpose for our lives. And when we lose that sense of being made in the image of the Creator, we lose a sense of purpose for our lives. And actually, one of the biggest problems of the world in which we live in is actually there are people all around us that are living without purpose. And at times it can be very hard to find purpose in our lives ourselves, even when we have faith. It gets eroded and it gets denied. We lose something of our humanity when we lose touch with the fact that God created us to fulfill purpose, like him, to be creative. And I do mean artists, but I don't just mean people that do kind of creative arts type stuff. I mean all of us, because many of us wouldn't associate in that way. The other reason, and it comes out of the other creation account, is that actually we were made to work. I love this. Thank you very much, Brian. The Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed life into his nostrils, the breath of life, and man became a living being. And the Lord God took man and put him in the garden to work and to take care of it. And I hope this isn't a radical shock for you, but actually you were created to work. Now, we live in a culture which kind of seems to kind of suggest that actually the less work we can do, but the more money we can have, the better off we will be. And that's kind of because our values have got skewed. That's a better word. Oh, boy. And it's on tape and on the internet. Don't you just love it? There's always got to be a vicar's little added extra into a talk, hasn't there, really? I'm not going to say any more, I only make it worse. Part of the whole thing about the fall is what was intended to be good is seen as negative. We were created to work, and it's good for us. I notice I say work and not employment. It's not the same thing. My summer reading, or part of it, we had a really lovely holiday when it was just us and no children. And we lay by a pool and read. And I have to say, it was a very nice experience. Was Michael Gunger's book, The Crowd, The Critic and The Muse. I just loved it because it speaks powerfully into culture today. But he had some interesting things to say about creativity. I mean, he's an artist, and so please don't get stuck in the kind of the creativity thing with this, because it's bigger than that. He describes art and creativity as the intentional ordering of reality. Think about it. The intentional ordering of reality. Isn't that what God does in creation? He speaks and creation comes into being. He speaks and there is order to it. And if we're made in the image of God, part of what should be happening in our lives, what we do in our lives, is to order our reality. We took our son back to uni during the week. It's a fascinating experience. What is the most fascinating experience is what happens when you go to collect him at the end of it. Chris Shaw can tell you all about that. We took him into his flat, his new room in the house he's been in before. Carol did the obligatory, let's spend a month shopping for a family, you know, on Daniel to try and feed him for most of the time he's at uni. We took it back. And it all got ordered neatly into shelves in the kitchen. You walk into his bedroom. There is a place for everything. His reality has been totally ordered. I have to say, probably we've ordered it more than he has ordered it. And he would have reordered it by we return and probably done a kind of a reverse creation. He would have gone from, rather than from chaos to order, it would have gone from order to chaos. Fair comment? Yeah, definitely a fair comment. We said, do you want to know where the Hoover is? Well, why would I need that until you come to clear the room at the end of the year? He said it, didn't he? He did say it, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we order our reality when we order the herbs in the cupboard in the kitchen, when we order our garden. Yeah, we can think of it in terms of creativity, but Gunga goes on, art is a sacred expression of human creativity. And this is where it gets complicated, that shares the same ontological ground as all human work. What he's saying is work and art are one. We kind of make this distinction, you know, you're creative or you kind of are not. You know, you do kind of work on employment or you don't. He's saying actually there's a kind of commonplace within it. Art, along with all work, is the ordering of creation towards the intention of the creator. And that's what we were created to do, to order and to make choices and to see something with our mind and bring it into being. Now, some people do that with paint. I try to do a bit with a camera, kind of in a kind of an amateurish way. But actually, an accountant might do it with a spreadsheet. One of Gunga's illustrations is the person that designs kind of the sewage system of a city and says, you know, they've ordered something, they've envisaged it, and they've brought it into being. You know, we were created to mirror our creator, and we were created to work and to bring order. And that's God's intention for us. And when we kind of stop doing that, our lives become purposeless and rootless, and kind of all of the stuff that kind of goes wrong, start of kind of despair and of purposeness, starts to creep in. And I think, you know, this is kind of dragging into the stuff about the fall. Because there's this tension, isn't there? We are created in the image of God, and therefore we do what God did, we create. We are made to work, but we work. And yet our experience of work, our experience of creativity, often is not positive. There are people like me who have what is called a vocation, a calling. You know, and I honestly do believe that God has called me to do that, even despite the strange words that end up in my talks from time to time. You know, and some of you may look at what you do. I remember Carol thinking about what she would do when we were first getting, before we got married, and she knew God was calling her to health visiting. And one of the real thrills of recent years is seeing her go back to that. You know, you may have a real sense that actually God was calling you to be a teacher. But there are a lot of people that work on a production line in Dagenham and have no sense of a call. There are a lot of people that will want to work, and actually, no matter how much they want to, either their health stops them, or the opportunity isn't there, and their circumstances aren't there. Or they find themselves doing something that actually, rather than giving purpose to their lives, feels purposeless. And so we talk about creation and creativity and how all of these things flow out of it, and yet there is this kind of gulf often between that and our experience. You know, even when we're doing something that, well, failure is something that crops up in it. It seems kind of on a regular basis. You know, how do we make sense of that? And I think back about how I've tried to make sense of kind of work and stuff like that. It's always been in this kind of creation image. And I've never fully enough taken account of the fall in that. And that was why we chose that for our reading. I want to talk a bit about futility. Pete Greggs at New Wine kind of made, just opened my eyes. He did a seminar with Ken Costa. Pete Hughes did a seminar with Pete Costa. And they kind of talked about God in the workplace. It was brilliant. Well worth getting the tape of. Really well worth getting the tape of. And well worth using Ken Costa's stuff on the internet under the title God at Work. Great stuff. Pete used the word recreation. Judging by the spell checker on my computer, it's not a real word. So decreation. You know, there's a sense that, you know, this is how God created it, but that has been marred. You know, and our understanding of work and creative needs to flow out of creation, but we have to see it through the prism of the fall. And that's why we had today's reading. We see the marring of what is good. We see the warping of God's intention. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it. And there's this tension that work is the gift of God in creation, and toil and futility creeps in as a result of the fall. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. This sense of kind of what God created to be good being destroyed. And it's that whole thing. Have the next slide, thanks. You know, the first two chapters of the Bible are all about creation, the way God intended this world to work. The next dozen or so chapters, up to Abraham, are all about decreation. It looks about what happens when we reject the way God made it to be. We see the damage in the relationship between us and God. We see the damage in the relationship between us and each other, that our relationships get twisted. And we see the damage in a relationship between us and our world. Our environment gets loused up. We make mistakes that destroy it. And we see the impact of the fall being worked out, as it feels like everything that God has made that's good is slowly twisted and warped and pulled apart. And then from Genesis 12, the story seems to change. It's a story of recreation. We know that finds it kind of its fulfillment, if you like, in the cross. Its culmination is yet to come when there's a new heaven and a new earth that's no longer marked by those things that mar it. And we look to that day. But actually, we need to see the pattern that's there throughout the whole of that process of recreation. You know, there is relationship restored. You know, God chooses friendship with a man, with Abraham. He's described as the friend of God. Relationship with God is restored. Relationship with kind of the planet is restored. The promise of the promised land for the Jewish people is a land that's going to be flowing with milk and honey, where actually, rather than, you know, work being about toil, actually the land brings forth blessing. And that's kind of God's intention. We see what it's like when Solomon kind of draws the kings and the queens of the earth. You know, it's almost like it's a kind of a recreation of God's kingdom, of order, as God intended it to be. But they're just windows that creep in. And when we talk about the kingdom of God, particularly when we talk about healing, about the now and the not yet, that we live in the kingdom now, but we don't see the fulfillment of it. We wait for that fulfillment to the day when Jesus returns. So we see God do some things, and we kind of make sense of that in terms of healing and those sorts of areas. But it also has huge relevance for actually the big areas of how we live our lives. Not just how we pray for someone that's sick, that is a big thing, but actually our workplace. You know, there are times when we see the now, we see God's blessing in our lives, and there are times when actually we see the not yet, when the whole thing seems to be crumbling around us. Even when we're in a successful place, there is still failure. But often, something, you know, what is good gets drawn away from us, and we live with this tension. And to make sense of this world where we were created to have purpose, where we were created to work, we have to see both that whole thing of creation, that we are made in the image of God, but we also have to realize and see that we live within this kind of culture of a broken world, but one in which we're called to be God's agents of recreation. There is futility, and there is also hope. It's not one or it's the other. The both are intertwined. And we need to see our part, in whatever way we play it, as being agents of recreation. It may be in telling someone about Jesus, but it may equally well be in making sure the balance sheet adds up at work, or this person doesn't lose his job because the firm is successful, or children are able to thrive in their classroom, or people get the care that they should get when they go into hospital. All these things about God's recreation. And we want to explore that. We want to explore how we play a part in that. And for some of us, it's work through employment. For others, it's through that intentional ordering of our world in such a way that we are a mirror at the creative of God. And money has nothing to do with it, but it's still work. It's still making a difference in the world in God, which God put us. And there's no retirement from that. We still do that when we're 101. It's part of what we're called to be, because it's what it means to be made in the image of God. It's part of what it means to be God's active agents in His world. Okay, I'm going to shut up. Let's take a moment to be quiet. And I just think it just might be good before the kids come bounding back in. If we just have a moment of silence and just a chance to reflect on what it means for us to be made in the image of God, to be called to create, how God is asking us to order our world, our part of His world. For some of us, there might feel like there's a real sense of purpose in what we do, what we're going to do on Monday morning, what we're going to do later today. For others, there might be big questions because it doesn't seem to fit the picture of our lives. That's okay. That's that whole thing about creation and decreation.